You're listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. This talk was given at 2007 Frankfurt Avenue. For more information, check out circleofhope.net or join us in person on Sunday evenings at 5 and 7 p.m.
We're going to talk about dialogue and how cool dialogue is today, and the ability to even have a conversation. So in order to start, let's talk about something super conflictive. Does anybody watch Saturday Night Live anymore? A couple. you watch it on YouTube? Okay. So I was offline most of the week, but I was online enough to see, like, just going to Facebook, I saw like at least 25 of my friends talking about Tina Fey. Do you experience anything like that, or do you know who Tina Fey is? She's from Delco, so UD, Delco people. So Tina Fey gets love for that. She gets love for being funny and intelligent and all that stuff. But it was funny that some people just thought what Tina Fey said on this sketch, on the show Saturday Night Live, not last night, the week before, some people thought it was just perfect. Did you hear anybody say that, or read any of your friends saying how perfect it was? Good. This is setup is going really well. Did you also experience anybody just saying how problematic it was, and how, what were some of the terms that people were talking about? Problems. White feminism. Everyone's like, well, that sums it up for me. No, don't want to add anything else. Well, yeah. So let's see. We'll get to it. So Tina Fey. Essentially, if you don't know anything about this, it's okay. I'll break it down for you. I wasn't there to show you funny videos this week. She gave some witty and intelligent remarks about particularly white supremacy, private militias, the so-called alt-right, the president, and she was talking about Charlottesville, where she went to that's where she did her undergrad education stuff. And because she's intelligent and funny and really kind of had a lot of insight, some people just were like, yeah, that's so awesome. And then some people didn't like her solutions to the situations that she proposed, I hope, comically. And because it's a corporately syndicated show, she's not going to call for revolution, right? Because the revolution don't make money for the bosses or whatever. So anyway, but her solution was to find a Jewish or black-owned bakery, buy a star-spangled cake, and eat cake rather than going and confronting possible rising movements of emboldened white supremacy, which is also like anti-Jewish, anti-queer, anti a lot of stuff that we'll just let those things be with there. So you get like why people had a problem with that, to say like, don't just stress eat in the face of this emboldened movement that is super problematic. But for some, just doing the good thinking was the important part, because we're sort of maybe oriented that kind of way, or having like a clear insight is really what was important about it. So she wittily identified certain things really was just, that was enough. If we raise our awareness, we generally trust that people are inching along towards goodness. So right thinking will lead to this kind of brighter, safer society. And for others, the privilege of a white celebrity telling people to not demonstrate a resistance to outright white supremacy was an opportunity to point out her wrong thinking, which, by the way, just as great as right thinking is, wrong thinking is terrible. And if you think wrong, or if you think the wrong thing, then you are in the camp of, you know, you're destroying the world. For others still, her remarks were funny, and it was SNL. She wasn't giving any serious application suggestions anyway. We need to come up with those on our own. We don't expect our comedians to solve all of our problems. But in so many ways, this dialogue can break down. Having a even conversation, like, I didn't even want to read the comments on my friend's stuff, where they were kind of like just back and forth about like whether, how good her thinking was or not. And so much of it, the first two I read or something, just had so much like disrespect in them. I was like, wow, are you friends? it's icky for me. I had an icky experience on the internet, everyone. Reading comments, internet comments gone wrong again. So just come back to your center for a moment. Come back to the center of love that we're just singing about and bringing our hearts back towards. And another little bit here from the Apostle Paul. This is what happens. This is static. I don't know if you remember that. This is before digital TV. This is what would happen if you had a communication problem. That's the illustration. So this is what the apostle is writing. If I speak in the tongues of mortals and angels but do not have love, I'm a noisy gong or clanging cymbal, staticky TV, problematic radio frequency or receiver. If I have prophetic powers and understand all the mysteries and have all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to even move mountains but do not have love, I'm nothing. If I give away all my possessions, if I hand over my body so that I might boast but do not have love, I gain nothing. Does that speak to where you're at all? For me, either right thinking or right doing still has this kind of problem of the dualism that you're going to do it right or wrong, and that's what's going to either create more safety for other people or create more safety for you. But the sense of belonging through love is the deeper thing that unlocks the rest of it, unlocks our ability to do right or to think right or to listen and to learn and to be able to share, to move from defensive postures past just inert listeners and towards accompanying recreators of reality. One of the reasons that I find our church to be a place of sanctuary is because we participate and we practice the art of dialogue. We don't always get it right, and the process of speaking and listening and other kinds of communication is often difficult, but there's love. And because of God's love filling us, we have love to give. So we're looking at this core conviction of ours in bold, that dialogue keeps us connected and protects our gravity. And these are these accompanying proverbs, these wise sayings we've collected to say this is the kind of people that we aspire to be. This is what's kind of defining us. And I want to just kind of go through these and offer us some space to think about dialogue and how useful that is, particularly to keeping us connected with each other and for what it and how it keeps our gravity healthy. Keeping us connected is both the art of understanding that you are distinct and you are unified. To have gravity is to have this sense that something is holding us together, something that even pulls other ideas into it, that pulls other people into it. There's something happening that is connectable. We want that to be healthy. So a lot of it is about interrelatedness. The first is that everyone is recovering from the sin addiction. Expect conflict. Conflict can be a generative force for good. Conflict is how we grow. Conflict is even how we can learn. Learning how to have healthy conflict with one another requires love and requires work. And those, let's not have a conflict right now with the new baby. But because we're all kind of banged up, we're all, even I like how we're saying we're recovering from these patterns that keep us alienated, isolated, and apart from each other, we're even having conflict of coming back together with God, coming back together with creation. That process is not smooth or easy all the time. But we look to God's grace as that grace leads us through the danger and opportunity of conflict. It could be affirming and assertive, concerned with relationships and with goals. The Chinese character for crisis is a combination of the danger and the opportunity. And that's kind of how we think about some conflict sometimes, that it's this crisis or this moment of the possibility for danger to take over. But in order to be affirming, we need to be listening and paying attention and connecting with the other. And to be assertive, we have to be connected with God and with our own sense of self. Those can go together in beautiful ways. And if both people are, or both groups of people even, are affirming and assertive, when we have relationships that we really care about the security of those connections, how they're fluid, how they're remaining healthy, yet we are moving somewhere together. So we're not just kind of putting the brakes on everything because people are having a hard time agreeing on what restaurant they're going to go to after the meeting. You know what I'm saying? But we're going to keep going. Here's the thing I'll talk about the longest. It's forgiveness. Forgiveness is the root of our love. Because we are flawed, loving each other is not always easy. We practice Matthew 18. Our body is held together by a dialogue of love. The text from Matthew chapter 18 is up there. Forgiveness is a lot more than just forgetting, or it's a lot more than just saying words, right? And if you listen to indigenous people or with either reading or relationships, some of the conflict in Canada over the last couple of years has been part of this Truth and Reconciliation Commission that was on the residential boarding schools. That happened in the States too. We haven't gotten that far yet in that kind of dialogue. But the Canadian government formally apologized for kidnapping children and systemically trying to kill the Indian and to save the man, was the expression, but it meant children and it meant all genders. Kind of problematic and horrible. And it happened here too for about 100 years. And when I was at this beautiful gathering in Saskatchewan last fall, one of the speakers, Adrian Jacobs, who's a Cayuga, he said that so often the Christians especially tell the Indians, this conversation needs to be about forgiveness. And he said, you're absolutely right. The indigenous people, however, don't have a problem with forgiveness. We're good. We've forgiven hundreds of times over hundreds of years. Our problem is that you're not repenting. So that's why we'll continue to forgive you and continue to assert that there needs to be change in this relationship because it is mad unhealthy. I don't know if he said mad unhealthy. That's kind of like a paraphrase of Adrian. He wouldn't mind. He's a poet. He appreciates the artistic freedom of that. But just imagine this cool way of thinking that Jesus is giving disciples even. If somebody sins against you, they do you dirt in the parlance of our times. You go to them directly. And then if they don't listen, well, first of all, if they do listen, great. That's what we're going for, is to be restored and work and be restored together. If they don't listen, bring a couple people with you. Try to restore them that way. If they're still not listening, then you bring the larger group to work on the situation. Now, one of the issues that we face so often is just identifying ourselves in, think about Charlottesville. Okay, that's still on my brain. I got to take a pause from the United States for a couple days, but that was, I have a lot of people that live in Charlottesville, work in Charlottesville, and organize there, and people, friends of mine were doing that stuff last week. So if how we identify ourselves in this story, in this illustration, is critical. I think so often when we hear somebody saying, I'm being hurt by either this person or this law or the situation, what is your instinct? Do you want to just listen to them? And even if it's about you, can you listen and can you be restored? How about when the person says, I'm being hurt, I'm being injured, I'm being sinned against? When are we going to start to find ourselves as those people who are brought alongside the wounded? That's part of who we are, is to be the folks who listen to the suffering of others. And we come alongside and we move with a path of restoration. And then when we get to the bigger things, because now we're talking with these bigger things, because the people who are even doing the systemic stuff are still caught up in their bureaucratic whatnots. That's where we need to move as a big body, create alternatives to those unjust systems, not just where inclusion can happen, but where formation can happen that's inclusive, that's super rooted in love, that's rooted in this sense of we are moving together towards restoration. It's so tricky for us to hear somebody saying that they're injured and to get defensive, to take up that posture. Or it's tempting for us to even just take a privileged listener perspective. We have the analysis now because we learned and we listened well. We're an ally. But when we move into accompaniment or accompliceness, that's where we're getting into making real changes that people can experience both in daily life, in these relationships, even in the micro society of the kingdom of God, or however you want to think about that. But it spills out and it builds bigger. It has bigger effects and bigger waves. Next one is Eberhard Arnold, the founder of the Bruderhof community. Has anybody ever hang with the Bruderhof? A couple of you down with the Hof, huh? Thought the Hof are some beautiful singers and communitarians, Anabaptists, and this beautiful poetry that is, the riff on some Bible stuff we love so much. Truth without love kills, and love without truth lies. We're reaching towards both. Engaging in healthy dialogue is what keeps us real. We want everyone among us to experience respect and understanding as they explore what they think and feel. We're not just trying to create a monolithic sense of unity through conformity or some kind of if you think what I think, then we can break bread together. But we're trying to help each other, even respectfully, to be able to understand our own feelings and share them together, to be able to understand our thinking, where it's problematic, where it leads to towards disharmony and to oppression and to a lack of health, and to heal together. Here's one that's will help you wake up. Jesus is living the greatest mutiny ever. We should not waste our rebellion on each other. One of the typical problems in a lot of marriages that I've seen, especially, this is like archetypes in a marriage, say, between, just imagine between like in a marriage between a man and a woman, this is the common archetype. The dude, especially as he gets into his 30s, becomes this person who is a slave at work and a king at home. To go out there and, win the bread or whatever, just has to sacrifice all dignity, all sense of, and you get how women can do this too, right? Okay. Give up your sense of community, give up your sense of moving to your wholeness, and then come home and want to be large and in charge and start telling everybody what to do rather than having a healthy conflict with your boss, go and yell at your kids, like this kind of situation, or make your mate the target of your frustration rather than your math teacher. You know what I'm saying? Like, you go through that transition of here's where I can be mean and get away with it to some level. We know that's not healthy. And to see Jesus as a revolutionary is one of the best things that ever happened to me. I'm so fortunate I got to meet Jesus the revolutionary as a late teen, so that the cause that I signed up for was never about building the state correctly or about even building an orderly society of people who think correctly, but we're moving against the things that harm and the things that keep us alienated towards wholeness. So wasting our rebellious spirit that you have, wasting your resistance, wasting your capacity to push back against injustice on each other would be a shame. We have a real battle, and like the wisdom from the film The Mockingjay, or maybe it was Catching Fire, I forget. Remember who the real enemy is. Let's not take it out on each other all the time, but let's actually make a difference to what needs to change in some big ways. Here's something that if you're not familiar with it, you might have some resistance to. Everybody gets listened to, but people who make and nurture disciples and who make love happen get listened to more. Sometimes you want the loudest person to get listened to the most. Sometimes you want the person who's the smartest or the most opinionated or even the wisest. And this is an ethic that we're nurturing among us. Say the people who make love happen, who help other people in their journeys, those are the folks who are speaking to our processes together, and that's the voices that we're listening to guide us the most. We still listen to everybody, especially to the voices that have been silenced or marginalized, or to people who haven't had the dignity to be able to speak in a group of people and have them listen. Every week, we have talk back where anybody can talk. This is so normal for me. Honestly, talk back to me isn't even that spicy. But friends of mine who visit, people who come for the first time, people who I hear them even talking about it, I explain what happens at a Sunday meeting, and I forget to even tell people about talk back because it's so normal. I'm just like, yeah, you put a little hot sauce on there. How else do you eat? People tell me, it's like, this is the weirdest and coolest thing ever. Anybody gets to talk and they could disagree with you? Aren't you like the pastor? I'm like, oh my gosh, we have so much work to do about just our ideas of hierarchy and what we think. Somebody who has a microphone is talking for a little while, they can't be disagreed with. I'm like, come on, we gotta work this out together. But when we listen to each other, we listen to everybody. All right, there's two more here. This one I like in terms of how we relate over long term. We say, don't look for a new rule to solve a relational problem or a policy adjustment to produce integrity. Looking for a rule to solve a problem, let that's a relationship problem, would be like, for instance, just to make a hypothetical thing with my family. Me and Helena, my wonderful 16-year-old daughter, experience conflict from time to time. Sometimes, rather than having conversation, I am tempted as a parent to just say, we're never talking about that again. You know, or just make some proclamation, you know? Say like, you will never raise your voice at me. That is the new rule. You will never be able to express yourself unguarded. You will process your feelings first and then come to me with this, you know, in this humble and respectful tone to your parent, which is, you know, how we're all trying to, you know, whatever. But like trying to make a rule so we don't have to have a relationship or work out a relationship problem, that's just creating bureaucracies. And churches have a tendency in the United States, right, to create bureaucracies that serve the bureaucracies, just like corporate society. We don't want to just make a bunch of rules. We want to actually work out our relationships. It's the dialogue in our lexicon, it means more than just exchanging information. But it's basic to being the body of Christ. It's this connection, this connectivity, this connective tissue, and it helps us to become one with God and become one together, to experience something together and to move together. We don't want to only explore what we think and feel, but we want to think and feel with God together. All right, I'm going to show you a picture of the eclipse. You can look at this one. this is, do you know about the eclipse? Okay, this is, in a couple weeks, there, oh, it's tomorrow? Okay. There's going to be a solar eclipse. Some in there's certain. Have you heard the expression "the tail of the dragon"? There's a, it's a cool term. I don't know if only my friends use it, but it means like a path where you can see, or you cannot see the sun. Because here, I guess we're only going to get an 80% eclipse, which really isn't that impressive, right? We're just like only 80. That sounds boring, you know. And in 6.5 years, there'll be some other one that will be like maybe a little bit more. Who knows? They are not telling us right now because they want us to go and buy glasses. And once we've been done purchasing the disposable eclipse glasses, then they'll tell us that when the next one is. But here's what you ever go to space.com. Yeah, it sounds like it's on internet.com/space or something like that. But check out let's see where it is. This is by E.C. Krupp at the Griffith Observatory. In a total eclipse, eyewitnesses are awed, exhilarated, and inspired. For only a few minutes, everything is suddenly, theatrically, and seemingly irrevocably transformed. The sun goes black. The temperature drops. The colors of sunset encircle the entire horizon. Planets pop into view in an oddly darkened sky. And people go a little nuts, thrilled by the grandeur and grateful for the circumstance. Space.com, the place of poetry. Some people are just real geeked about this, right? And like, it's a thing worth traveling across the country for. A bunch of people going to parts of Tennessee or like, you know, Oregon, Idaho. You know, is kind of wild right now with people trying to go there. Others find it to be overblown. Like everything else, it's overhyped. You know, it's like, big deal, a celestial event. If you looked at the celestials, there's events happening every day. Don't get too excited about one. Some are looking for the glasses, right, that allow you to look at it without going blind immediately. Which I don't know. I didn't look it up on science.com or eclipse.com. Will this actually happen? But I ain't looking at it. But just to put it out there. You can think I'm superstitious, but I was raised a certain kind of way, and I'm gonna stay that way. Some people, though, have purchased counterfeit glasses. It may have been you. I don't know. I just thought I wanted to make it more exciting. But the glasses ain't gonna help you. Or people are sending me messages on like 30 other people on Facebook Messenger about how like the previous post about the counterfeit glasses, while they had to delete it, but you really should pay attention. And taking selfies with the eclipse, it will destroy your phone's camera or something. You know, like we're starting to speculate wildly about the situation. My point is, I wonder if, rather than beginning with our opinions about the eclipse, and we just put ourselves into camps, like, do you think the eclipse is cool or not? And we just divide ourselves up. Are you willing to travel for it or not? You know, are you going to wear glasses? Are you going to take the day off? Are you going to just go on and just watch us all be divided up by our opinions about the thing? Maybe we can start with just a little bit of wonder, a little bit of awe, a little bit of magnificence, of grandeur, and grateful for the circumstances, like Casey Krupp at the Griffith Observatory on space.com said. The prophet Habakkuk, which is, we don't often read here, has this beautiful little moment speaking to the creator, the foundation of everything. That's what one way to translate this Adonai, which became Lord. Lord, I have heard of your fame. I stand in awe of your deeds. Repeat them in our day and in our time, make them known. Awe can be easier if we practice it, if we allow ourselves to be raptured by the mystical beauty of a moment, the present moment, or even just something magnificent. I was hoping to catch some of the Perseid meteor shower going away from cities and stuff over the last week or something. It's a celestial event. Don't worry about it. But it happens every year, so we're just kind of like, meh. But a couple years ago, I was with my family on a lake in central Ontario and just watching cosmic dust burn, which we call shooting stars. More like rocks falling through the atmosphere, However, celestial event, really cool. I was hoping to see that, and it was overcast every night that we were in the boondocks. Kind of a bummer. However, when we were in Montreal, we did get to go to the biosphere, which is at the Olympic Park, which they took this huge structure that they built for a couple of games and then built four different habitats with different climates within the same structure. Kind of mystical. I could not get enough of the tiny penguins. I don't even want to show you a picture because it insults the marvel. Do you ever stare at tiny penguins? It was amazing. In all seriousness, watching them stretch, watching, and they're this tall, watching them dive into the water, and I could, there was the way that the bulletproof glasses, I could see below the water. Watching the one who had a little bit of hair and stuff on the side of his head, I couldn't get enough. And I was like, what is even going on right now? They're not just adorable, but they're miraculous. And I was there, and I could have sat there longer, but I thanked God for that moment. When we have a healthy sense of awe, we're going to be more open to receiving God's love. And not that this is a linear process, but when we're receiving God's love, when it fills us, we feel more compelled towards dialogue than merely diatribe. We appreciate the perspective of another rather than just want to force conformity. When we develop that kind of empathy for someone else, we not only identify injustice that they're facing, but face it ourselves together by living our lives in a way that embodies alternatives, not just this hope that we're going to fix the U.S., but lovingly telling the truth about white supremacy and about the other issues that are being brought up, and lovingly acting alongside those suffering, which is right where Jesus lives. Our ability to dialogue in that process helps us to stay connected and to have a healthy gravity that could bring more people into a loving way of thinking and acting and forming that is healing, that's restorative, that brings us back into harmony with God, with our Creator, and with each other and with creation.
Thanks for listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. If you want to talk about it or get connected to a cell, you can find one under our Connect dropdown at circleofhope.net.